What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to the Awesomeo Fantasy Football Channel, and we have a very exciting episode today. We are getting into the nitty-gritty, the meat and potatoes, the middle rounds of your fantasy drafts. Your fantasy leagues are typically won and lost. Today we are talking Matt underscore Gajewski. How you doing today, bud?
I'm doing great. You and I had the pleasure of breaking down the top 12 running backs. We both found out we were really high on Austin Eckler. But ultimately, at the top of drafts, even where we have Eckler, the difference between that and his ADP is not too drastic. This is where we start to see some of those bigger differences, where we can take a stand on certain players and hopefully win our leagues with this analysis.
Yeah, absolutely. You're going to have to make some tough decisions in here. And think about yourself on the clock in the fourth and fifth round. You're going to be deciding between a high-quality wide receiver and one of these players. You may have one of your favorite quarterbacks or tight ends on the boards. Positional value, we'll break that down. But this technical analysis between these running backs can help you so much as we get into draft season. And it can help decide some of your exposures if you're playing best ball and drafting multiple teams on sites like Underdog Fantasy. We're focusing here on fantasy football. We'll always give our bend here about best ball, but these rankings are from our expert consensus rankings, and we want to go in reverse order. So we're going to start at running back 24. Then we're going to move up to our consensus running back 13. There is one that we already talked about in the mid-tier, in the first-tier running back, so we won't break that down, but we got a lot to get into. You ready to dig into this one?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it. Okay, number 24 on our list is Josh Jacobs, running back from the Las Vegas Raiders. They got a new coaching staff. They got all sorts of weird stuff going on in the front office. I digress. Jacobs has one last chance as a first-round pick to play up to a new contract, and he may actually get consistent work in the passing game. We would so hope. What do you think about Josh Jacobs for 2022?
He's a player that, in my personal rankings, I have a little bit lower. He's my RB27, so we're not talking about huge differences here. But with Josh Jacobs, I think there are a number of concerns. And the first one came when the Raiders decided not to pick up his fifth-year option. He's a former fifth-round pick under the John Gruden, Mike Mayock regime. So that was a negative. From there, you move to the new coaching staff. So you have Josh McDaniels coming in. He brings in Mick Lombardi as the OC. That's a group of play callers, especially McDaniels, who have used running back by committee essentially every single year he's with New England and need a long tenure there as OC. No matter who they drafted, it was RB by committee. And that included a former first rounder in Sony Michel. When we look at the Jacobs profile, even the previous regime under Gruden and company never really viewed him as a pass catcher. Last year, he was kind of forced into that role by necessity. You know, they lost Kenyon Drake due to injury, and then they were just using like Peyton Barber as this banger back on the goal line. So situationally, I have a lot of concerns about his role. And then not to mention, they brought in a pair of backs in the draft, Samir White coming off the board with decent capital, and Britton Brown from UCLA very, very late. Not to mention Amir Abdullah is still on the team. He primarily is a special teamer, but I think maybe you could see a pass-catching role if Drake were to go down or something like that. But ultimately, those are a lot of concerns for Josh Jacobs, and I think the path for him getting a three-down workload is going to require multiple injuries, which is why I have him a little bit lower. What do you think about Jacobs?
He is polarizing for me, because I think you broke it down excellently there. But I still see a sliver of a ceiling scenario where this team sees if he can play for a contract this year, and they utilize him in the way that they did in the middle of the season. You know, we saw decent target numbers at some point last year. Week 11 against Cincinnati, 7 targets, 9 targets against Washington, week 13, 6 targets. If he gets up there and then adds those typical 13 to 18 carries he adds on the ground, that's going to be value in the mid-fifth round, no matter what format you're playing. I don't know how efficient it's going to be. I know I want pieces of this AFC West because I believe in the shootout potential of these games in general. And there is some touchdown upside. I do think it's possible that we see McDaniels do a typical three-person committee, likely like he did in New England. I'm kind of interested in that dynamic, especially because how much of that was James White and the personnel they had in New England, and how much is the coaching staff? We'll certainly find out when it comes to Josh Jacobs. Any last words before we move on to the next person on our list?
Oh, not too many. I think you could look beyond the James White years, even prior to that. Like, he was their OC from 2012 onward, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it's been a while. It's true.
It's a large sample, but ultimately, you make good points with Jacobs. Like, he did flash a little bit as a receiver, and he, even in college, he wasn't the feature back, but when he was on the field, he did have situational pass catching ability. The 4.3 targets per game were phenomenal. Again, I think that was partially because of injury, but Jacobs definitely didn't play poorly. He didn't play like Ronald Jones out there in the pass game. So there is that chance, and perhaps I'm a little too low on him for that reason, because he did show it at least for a small period of time.
Yeah, to play devil's advocate with my own argument, I was a little higher on Zamir White, and I actually think it's a good place where, you know, if Jacobs gets hurt or, as you said, doesn't prove himself as a pass catcher, I think there is opportunity there for a mid-round pick to get some work at some point in the season. We move on here to our consensus running back 23, Jakalen. You might know him as J.K. Dobbins, coming back from a season-ending injury. Didn't see him at all in his second season, but in his first year with the Ravens, he was highly efficient, looked like the 1-2 hammer that they were looking for in Baltimore. Now, Gus Edwards is absolutely going to get work here, but J.K. Dobbins with second-round draft capital and expected to come back fully healthy in 2022. What do you think about his upside here going into the season?
I love Dobbins. I'm much higher than him, or on him than the consensus. So somebody must have him pretty low. So I'll be very curious to hear what you have to say. I have him RB17, and there's a couple of reasons for this. Like, they're going fully back to the J.K. Dobbins, Gus Edwards committee. That's fine. When you look at what they did in 2020, Dobbins was averaging 8.9 carries per game, 1.6 targets per game over the course of the season. However, they had some backs exit that backfield midseason. So when you just look at when it was Dobbins and Edwards putting, both of them were above 10 touches per game pretty clearly. And then you look at the offense as a whole, all of their offseason moves indicate a return towards that run-heavy approach we saw in 2019-2020 under Lamar Jackson. Last year, they regressed a little bit towards the mean in terms of pass rate. They were 23rd in neutral game pass rate, which is a little bit higher than where they'd been. Typically, they were around 30 or lower. And then from there, they're very up-tempo offense. Just raw plays per game, the Ravens were first in the NFL last year, and they've been around that over the last couple of years. We're expecting them to be efficient. So with that elevated run rate and their plays per game, there is room for both Dobbins and Gus Edwards, and even Lamar Jackson, to receive a lot of work here. Just looking back at what happened in that 2020 season, Dobbins only received 25% of the carries. That's including all players in the team, including Lamar Jackson. I think that's really low, and you could probably see him around 35-40 with Lamar Jackson and Edwards this year, and in such a run-heavy scheme that has a lot of value. Even on those 8.9 carries per game, Dobbins still hit 805 rushing yards in that year, so a lot of upside here, I think.
Exactly. Super dynamic player who benefits from having superstar rushers on his team like Lamar Jackson. Imagine the directions that defenses are moving when a run pass option is called, or a QB option is called on Baltimore. Many defenders are going to flash towards Lamar, leaving a dynamic runner like J.K. Dobbins available to have big holes in the rushing game. I think a 40% opportunity share would make him a smash at his current ADP. I have him in my top 65 players here as we look towards our expert consensus rankings releasing soon. And this is one of those situations where, even though he was hurt last year, you bet on talented rushers in good situations, and good things typically happen in fantasy drafts. This could easily be a player we're drafting in the first two rounds of fantasy drafts next year. We move on to another talented player with a mucky backfield in Washington. The situation in terms of the team's ability, very different than Baltimore, and they draft Brian Robinson Jr. They still have J.D. McKissic on the roster. Antonio Gibson, with that early third-round draft capital, still likely the most talented rusher on that team, but how much opportunity and quality opportunity can we really expect for him this year? What do you think about him going into 2022?
He's not a player I like very much. He's right after Josh Jacobs for me. I have him RB28. They're essentially in the same situation, but Antonio Gibson's on a worse team with a worse quarterback and a worse offensive environment. He has J.D. McKissic to handle pass down work, just like Jacobs theoretically is Kenyon Drake. And then Washington invested in a mid-round draft pick at the running back position, just like Las Vegas did in Brian Robinson, who is a third-round pick, which is significant enough capital where he should have some sort of role, even if it's just as a situational change of pace or a goal line back. And I think part of the reason is you had Antonio Gibson handle the larger workload last year, largely inefficient, but A lot of that had to do with injuries for Gibson. So he handled 16.1 carries per game, 3.3 targets per game. So, I mean, we're above 19 touches, only rushed for 1,037 yards, which is pretty poor efficiency. Receiving yards, those also declined for a player that actually played the receiver position in college for Memphis. And again, it's really hard to figure out how much of that was Gibson's own inefficiency and how much was the result of injuries. But ultimately, this is a team that's not very good. You look at their pass rate in neutral game scripts, they were 22nd. Not really expecting that to increase much moving to Carson Wentz. You look at their plays per game, 17th. That's well below average. And they're a team based on win totals that's projected to finish in the bottom half of the division. So how many wins and positive game scripts is Antonio Gibson receiving, especially when he's not having that receiving workload? And not to mention, we talked about an upside case for Jacobs. I think theoretically Jacobs could maybe have one injury and get a full workload. To me, Gibson needs two. He needs both McKissick and Robinson to get injured to get that full workload. So for me, I'm expecting the touches to come down. The offense is going to be bad. It's tough for me to rank him near the top 24. I have him at RB 28.
Yeah, I've been kind of influenced by the rest of the Osmo staff here because I was a little bit higher on Antonio Gibson going into the season. I saw a player that that despite injuries still was top five in the NFL in evaded tackles and top 15 in the NFL in evaded tackles per touch. So if you're able to break tackles that consistently and you're still young, maybe you're just the most talented running back on your roster. But Ron Rivera has even said in the last few days that he expects these running backs to be used as a committee. JD McKissick is not going anywhere if healthy in the passing game, and they are going to find ways to get Brian Robinson Jr., who was drafted in the same round as Antonio Gibson, onto the field. So he's being touch squeezed all over the place, not to mention Curtis Samuel, if healthy, also gets some rushing attempts on a per game basis. This is really tough. I really like the player. I like the talent. I think he may have to wait a year. There are always injuries. I'm not saying come out of best ball season with zero Antonio Gibson, but at ADP, I'm out. Sounds like you are as well.
I am. And like you said, with players like Antonio Gibson, I'm still picking some of them up, but they're players that I want to take when they fall, even if it's just a couple spots, which generally means I'll be underweight on those players.
Well said. Well said. Now we move to maybe the most polarizing player on this list, and a player I'm a little bit lower on, but not out of the draftability range for me. This is Cordarrelle Patterson of the, dare we say, up-and-coming Atlanta Falcons. I'm not sure what we can expect from this offense in 2022, and yet Cordarrelle Patterson was the bright spot, had a super efficient middle of the season, kind of came back down to earth at the end of the fantasy year, but still had a tremendous statistical season, still has that first-round draft capital, and was finally used as the running back we always thought he could be in fantasy. How are you feeling about him heading into next year?
I like him a little bit more than the players we talked about, with the exception of J.K. Dobbins. He just has that three-down role, theoretically, all locked up. When you look at what they brought in, sure, they draft Tyler Algier, and there's a lot of hype around Algier as a late-round guy. I think it makes sense considering it's really only Patterson ahead of him. But at the same time, he's a fifth-round draft pick, and I know there's James Robinsons, there's Chris Carsons, and players that emerge from those later rounds. But if you look at the full group of players drafted on day three, they rarely hit, and it's not very good. So with Tyler Algier's draft capital, I'm not expecting him to play a role, but if he does, fantastic. I'll take a late-round flyer on him. With Patterson, you actually do have a three-down skill set, and a lot of it comes from his pedigree as a returner, his prowess as a receiver, a position he played for half of last year. And he's a player that actually ascended last year into like kind of the role we thought he'd play. He actually had a career high in receiving yards, career high in rushing yards. He finally saw the role I think that is suited to him. The problem here is he's just on a bad team. So you're trying to balance having a full workload with being on a bottom five team in football with perhaps the worst quarterback play behind Marcus Mariota. Overall, the Falcons, they were extremely slow. They were 31st in plays per game. Their pass rate in neutral game scripts does benefit Patterson. It was 12th. But then you look at when he shifted roles, the targets plummeted. When he was actually in the running back role, they weren't throwing to him. Now, is that a function of Matt Ryan? Is that a function of the offensive design? I think there's enough uncertainty there where you could expect him to pick up a few extra targets, not to mention he's just a good receiver. So I'm not going to rely heavily on that small sample. I think if you just look at three-down workloads across the league, Patterson has a reasonable expectation.
Very, very well said. And I won't reiterate all those points you said. Exactly. His targets went down in a really concerning way as he shifted more into a running back heavy role. And yet, I still think that there's upside, both as a receiver, to them getting back to what actually worked in the middle of the season. And also, Marcus Mariota right now, he's much, much more mobile as a quarterback than Matt Ryan is. And that may actually open up holes for Cordarrelle Patterson in the rushing game that weren't there. So I think rushing efficiency could actually be improved as well. So I think you gotta look at your format here more so than other players in this mid-tier of running backs, because whole point PPR, Cordarrelle Patterson, if he gets back to that 7-7 role, like seven carries, seven targets, or even seven receptions on a per game basis, you're going to love that in whole point PPR, even if the Falcons don't score a lot of touchdowns this year. He's getting up there in age. That part concerns me a little bit. I mean, it's his age 31 season, and we're talking about a running back. Not the tread on the tires of a typical 31-year-old because of the position change, but still, the huge drop-off is absolutely in the range of outcomes. And if you wanted to play it as, I want to be a year early and stay away from that, I respect that. That's not how I'll draft in multiple drafts like Underdog.
I think that makes a lot of sense. He's a player I want to be around the field on. I don't really want my season to be riding on, you know, like being overexposed to Cordarrelle Patterson, who, like you said, does have questions, and he's one of them is age, and he's on a really bad team. So I'm just going to try to stay around the field on him and not really take a huge stand.
That's quite fair. And we've been talking about it a few times already today. We are brought to you by Underdog Fantasy, our sponsor for many of these fantasy football videos, because it's so applicable. This information that we're talking about might be kind of fantasy football tilted today, but we're still talking about how we're feeling about getting to them. The ADP on Underdog is probably the sharpest off-season ADP we've ever had as an industry. And make sure when you sign up over there and start getting into those best ball drafts, use promo code Osmo to get up to a $100 first match deposit bonus. That's good enough for 4 free entries to the Best Ball Mania 3 tournament, $2 million to first place, $1 million to second, $1 million to the regular season champion. I'm always thinking about that possibility, winning the regular season championship and then just riding out the playoffs knowing I already won $1 million with the possibility of more on the way. That sounds pretty good. That's what we're trying to do over here, trying to help you take that tournament down and many more. Use promo code Osmo and get into Underdog today. Okay, we move on to some of the youth in this section. Travis Etienne, another player on a bad team, but talk about no tread on the tires, has not played an NFL game yet. That first round draft capital from the previous regime in Jacksonville now has a new coach, but looks like he's full go at OTA. He's going to have a full offseason to prepare with this team. What are the expectations for Travis Etienne on this Jaguars team?
So he's certainly on a bad team, but his teammate, James Robinson, kind of squashed some of those concerns a year ago. You can definitely produce on a bad team if you have a full workload. And speaking of James Robinson, he had a week 16 Achilles tear. Very few running backs come back from an Achilles tear altogether. We've only seen it a couple times. And most of them don't come back like Cam Akers did. So there's a very real expectation that James Robinson misses the entire year. That means Travis Etienne, at the very least, is going to have a full workload for a majority of the season and perhaps all of it. Behind him, they have Reichwell Armstead and Snoop Connor, a day 3 draft pick out of Ole Miss, who profiles as just this big banger back. So based on this workload, Etienne should be receiving not quite like a Najee Harris workload, but certainly a feature back role. He's a solid pass catcher as well, which he displayed in his final 2 seasons with Clemson. He was actually drafted to play that Curtis Samuel, Paris Campbell role under the Urban Meyer regime. Didn't work out because of the injury, but that just shows that he does have solid pass catching ability. From there, you look at the Jaguars. I mean, man, they're going to be a team that's bad, but again, we're trying to balance, what does this workload look like, even though the team isn't expected to perform? Not to mention he's reunited with his college quarterback. So when you're talking about rapport out of the backfield, that's there. And I hope that the new coaching staff can try to tap into that a little bit. So I like Etienne a lot. He's a player I'm actually moving up my board quite a bit. When I look at players in this range, for me, it's, you know, like Etienne versus Cordarrelle Patterson. I think he has a better role than Cordarrelle Patterson. Offense is kind of the same. Miles Sanders, who I have a little higher than consensus. I think he has a better workload than Sanders. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, I think he's a better workload than him. Elijah Mitchell, probably a better workload than him. So it's really how much do you want to downgrade him in the offense? But do you think he has this full workload locked up? I think that's the biggest assumption that needs to be made.
I really do. I really do. I think you're getting a discount. If Travis Etienne was in the same situation as if he, let's say he was drafted in the 2022 draft, and he was walking into the situation where James Robinson had two productive years, tore his Achilles in week 16, there is no way he would have fifth round draft capital. We'd need him in the second round, maybe even the early third round, but he'd be going in that rookie Jonathan Taylor, rookie Cam Akers, rookie J.K. Dobbins range. And I feel like we're getting a two round discount at some points with Travis Etienne on that same situation. Now, I want to ask you this question, especially since you're so locked into the college football scene. When I saw Travis Etienne as a young player at Clemson, this guy looked shot out of a cannon. And he has dealt with injury after injury, some of them just nicks and cuts, a couple games here and there. Obviously, the major injury last year. I know he's young, but is there some concern here that the injuries are starting to pile up even though he hasn't played an NFL game yet?
He was relatively healthy in college, occasionally banged up, but he handled a really large workload with Clemson. I'm not really too concerned about the injuries. The foot, it appears he's already fully recovered from. He's been reported to be practicing already, which I think is solid. A lot of times you worry about these players if they're just healthy around the start of the year. Maybe they have some compensation injuries later on, but he should be continuing his rehab and now ramping up to speed through practice. So I think a guy that doesn't have a lot of wear in his tires kind of because of the offense he played in at Clemson, they had a plethora of four-star, five-star backs. I think he has a reasonable expectation to be fully healthy at the start of the year and continue his explosiveness.
That is what I like to hear. I set you up a little bit because I was really, really hoping you would say that. But yeah. Spoiler alert, Nick and I, on our previous Mania Monday best ball draft, and we got the highlights over on the best ball channel as well. If you just want to take a few minutes, see what we did in the draft instead of watching this whole hour and a half long stream. We went wide receiver heavy in the beginning of that draft and then took Travis Etienne and Josh Jacobs as our running back 1 and 2. I feel really good from a workload standpoint and an upside standpoint, even though those teams may not be the best in football by any stretch. Now, a team that is expected to be competitive this year and had a player kind of come out of nowhere when a mid-round pick was supposed to be that guy, Elijah Mitchell of the San Francisco 49ers took over basically from day one with Raheem Mostert's injury and Trey Sermon just not showing up ready to play football, and now looks like a dynamic playmaker that can be relied on in one of the more competitive teams in the league. What do you think of Elijah Mitchell headed into this year?
I like Elijah Mitchell a lot still, and we've done this before. It's Kyle Shanahan backfield. They're extremely volatile. Some of it due to injuries, like Raheem Mostert was a guy a lot of people drafted last year, and it was just the injury that got him. He's gone. So now you look at the current roster for the NFC West 49ers. There's not much there. It's Mitchell himself, Jeff Wilson, who situationally had solid games, but I don't think anyone views him as the long-term option. And at best, he's like a goal line, couple carry a game guy. You have Jamichael Hasty, who's literally just undrafted free agent fodder. I wouldn't be surprised if he's not with the team because of how poorly he's played. And then they drafted Tyrion Davis Price, who is a curious Kyle Shanahan draft pick. He's a player that was never really productive in college. When you look at what he did with LSU, he never had more than 211 carries in game. And he struggled to beat out some players that are no longer with LSU. Some of them had to transfer to different teams, like Corey Kiner, a back he couldn't beat out, is now with Cincinnati. It's just really tough for me to bank on a player like that. It's almost like Trey Sermon all over again. Not to mention the pass catching profile for Davis Price is pitiful. He only caught 10 passes in his final season with LSU. With that said, it's not an offense that truly prioritizes pass catching. But to me, all this says that there's not much competition behind him. So Elijah Mitchell overall to me is a player that has shown a lot. This offense is super conducive to the run when you have a back getting the full workload. Average 19 carries per game, 1.8 targets per game. And he actually showed a little bit as a pass catcher in situations. Now, the usage is going to be really key here because you have some moving parts. What happens with Debo? We saw him, this is Elijah Mitchell, now handle 86% of the running back carries last year, but only 62% of the overall carries. Mm-hmm. A lot of that had to do with Debo. Now you're also introducing Trey Lance. So if Trey Lance starts, and I tentatively expect him to, does that percentage of the overall carries drop even further? That's a big concern for me. And we don't know the answer to these questions. And Debo, he's a player that might not get those running back carries because of how pissed off he is. Like, he might just beg for an overall offensive change. And that might be something they accommodate just to keep him on the team and keep him happy because he's so dynamic. So a lot of moving parts, but the upside is clearly there as a three full feature back to me. I think we can still draft him with that upside in mind.
Absolutely. It's absolutely there. And yeah, I just looked at my projections and it is a full 10% drop. Even if Trey Lance starts, I still think Elijah Mitchell handles 50% of the team's carries when healthy, but getting up to that 62%, like you said, starts to look really, really tough when you include a rushing quarterback, because many, many running backs on this list are touch squeezed by one player like a rushing quarterback, but to be squeezed by two, then things get dicey. As we were talking about with Antonio Gibson, still, this Tyrion Davis price love is like exactly what you said with Trey Sermon. We have a long history of Kyle Shanahan offenses choosing running backs that understand the system best, no matter your draft position. Who can forget Alfred Morris in Washington? And also the screw-ups that have happened, not just Trey Sermon. Remember them pounding the table for Joe Williams in the fourth round of the 2017 draft? I don't think that guy ever saw the field. Meanwhile, they hit on these late round picks and nobody cares. The system is still really strong in San Francisco. Elijah Mitchell, for me, I'm going to take my chances. I'm going to get him below ADP, though. I just think there are too many moving parts, just as you said. We move on to running back 18 here in the same division, a player who rushed back from injury, looked fairly effective at some points, got nicked up in the NFC playoffs. I'm talking about Cam Akers, who came back incredibly fast from an Achilles injury. I think we all love to see it as a fan of football, but can he be effective on this Super Bowl winning team going into 2022, where he's likely to get a large share of the workload, though Daryl Henderson is still there?
Yeah, that's the thing. Daryl Henderson being there, I think, matters. When you look at Cam Akers, he was kind of slowly eased into action. He went 5 carries in week 17, played terribly. In the first week of the playoffs, 17 carries, played terribly, 3 yards per carry. He maxed out at 24, and this was against Tampa Bay. It was a 3-point win. 24 carries, 48 yards, which is 2 yards per carry. And then the Rams saw that game, and they scaled him back. 13 carries in each of the subsequent games against the 49ers and then against Cincinnati in the Super Bowl. That's a concern to me. Now, the positive with Akers is he definitely rushed back from injury. He didn't have time to prepare. He was just full rehab and then went right out there. He now has an additional 9-10 months to knock off any rust that may be there. But is the explosiveness gone entirely? We've only seen a couple running backs come back from Achilles tears ever in football, and none of them have ever really looked the same. So that is a major question mark. And then you have capable players in the backfield. Daryl Henderson, he's a former day two pick. He's performed when he's been asked to, and they continue to draft running backs late in the draft as well. They did take Kyren Williams, a guy at Notre Dame, who was expected to be a top five back in this class till he ran the 40-yard dash. But ultimately, he's a player that's very sound. And no, he's not going to handle a full workload, but he's an excellent pass protector, which is huge for running backs getting on the field in third down. And he's a solid pass catcher. So could he come out there and handle a couple touches? Yeah, I think so, which isn't necessarily the strength of Akers or Henderson. So that's an issue for me. Ultimately, this comes down to the explosiveness. If he has it, I think he can regain that full three down workload. Just not sure based on what we saw last year.
Yeah, and as a reminder too, he actually got hurt again, just like nicked up in that NFC Championship game. He hurt his shoulder, was in the locker room for a while. So not only were they looking at his efficiency in the previous games and saying, hey, maybe he's not fully ready yet, but he actually got hurt again, though it wasn't enough to keep him out of the Super Bowl. He was pretty ineffective. I think the Rams, from a front office standpoint, are doing exactly what they should do with the running back position in terms of draft capital. You spend the second round pick on Akers in 2020, but you continue to fill the room with late round picks and see if you hit in the way that we've been talking about with the San Francisco 49ers. I think there is less competition for opportunity, except for the fact that Daryl Henderson is a true running back too. In some of these cases, there is really nobody of merit behind these running back ones, but Henderson can handle a full workload if asked. Still, I have Akers in a place where I definitely want to get to him. I actually have him right at expert consensus at running back 18 right now. Another player with a polarizing past, but should have a locked-in workload on a team that is expected to win their division. I'm talking about Ezekiel Elliott on the Cowboys, getting up there in age, actually, but I think he should have this position locked in. Tony Pollard may have something to say about that in Dallas. He's been the more efficient rusher the last 2 years, but Elliott's still going off the board pretty high. How are you feeling about him headed into this year?
I like him more than consensus, for sure. I think there's a lot of negative sentiment about a guy who's really knocked in the industry playing through injury. And he tore his PCL in week four. Like, that is a season-ending injury for some backs, depending on their pain tolerance. Ezekiel Elliott is not soft whatsoever and played through a PCL tear. Like, unbelievable. There's no wonder the guy's efficiency declined. I think a lot of people will argue that that is due to overall volume, like, throughout his career. He's definitely handled a massive amount of touches, and we generally see running backs decline when they handle that workload. But, I mean, it coincides directly with tearing a major ligament in your knee and playing through it. It's like, I can't get past that. So, ultimately, I think whether it's age or the injuries, he's still not the player he was when he came out of Ohio State. So we should see a decline in efficiency. But ultimately, how does that affect his role? We know Tony Pollard's going to be involved somewhat, but Ezekiel Elliott, even while injured, handled 58% of the carries, 50% of the attempts in the red zone. And that's on an offense which is incredibly up-tempo. They were second in plays per game, and they were fifth in neutral game script pass rate. So Elliott is also involved in the pass game. He's an excellent workload there. He averaged just shy of 4 targets per game, which is among one of the best marks in the offense. So even if this ends up being like a 50-30 split with a handful of carries going to Dak and the number 3 back, there's still a lot left on the bone here for Ezekiel Elliott if he can even play at an average level. And I think because of some of the injuries he sustained, that number could be as high as like 60% of the running back attempts. I think people are just too low on him. Maybe he doesn't have the ceiling as like a Cam Akers or something like that because Pollard's presence. But I mean, there's still a lot of production left here, even in a timeshare.
I agree fully. He's only 27 headed into this year. He's actually hasn't turned 27 yet, but he will be during the season. And like you said, I mean, we are totally discrediting the severity of that injury he played through in 2020 when this team had Dak Prescott on the field, which obviously was a limited time because he had that major injury. Ezekiel Elliott was number one among running backs in expected fantasy points per game, up there with Christian McCaffrey when healthy as well. So Ezekiel Elliott has so much upside here. I have him ahead of consensus. Sounds like you do too as well. And this is still a player that, you know, the big concern, as you said, is he's going to pass 2,000 career touches this season. And just when the workload gets that high, the possibility of severe injury or just getting nicked up to the point where the efficiency starts to degrade consistently, the probability goes up. Just no doubt about it. But can I predict that better than other people? No, absolutely not. So I need to think about the situation, think about the usage, think about the offense, and everything points up for Ezekiel Elliott. Take your shots on Tony Pollard in best ball drafts if you want to, but Elliott is the man in that backfield. All right, the next player on our list is actually James Conner. We talked about him as our running back 12, obviously, as our rankings continue to shift in this offseason. He's actually sitting at running back 16 in our expert consensus rankings. So we're going to skip him for now and talk about number 15, Leonard Fournette. This is an opportunity of a lifetime for Leonard Fournette because even with that first round draft capital and all that usage in Jacksonville, what he really wanted was a backfield to himself on a Super Bowl contender. Show us what you got this year, Leonard Fournette. How are you feeling about him on this Tom Brady-led offense once again?
I like Leonard Fournette for sure. It's just everybody that we're going to talk about now has some sort of warts. We're skipping over James Conner, but just for the people quickly, I would prefer James Conner to every single player on this list that's coming up because Conner has a locked-in three-down workload no matter what that only injury can prevent. Leonard Fournette had that, but then they drafted Rashad White on day two, which is good enough draft capital where we should expect him to play some sort of role. And looking at Rashad White's profile, he is excellent as a pass catcher coming out of Arizona State, over 40 receptions. This guy is a baller through the air. And I think initially Tampa Bay had this plan to limit Fournette as a pass catcher, but Giovanni Bernard got hurt last year. Keyshawn Vaughn's not the player they thought he was. So Fournette was kind of forced into this three down workload. And he had an amazing workload down the stretch last year. But I just don't think we can expect that moving forward because of what the team has shown repeatedly, not just the Giovanni Bernard signing. They also brought him back, by the way. But now Rashad White, coming in. It's just too much of a concern for me to rank him ahead of James Conner. But when we look at the other players in this range, he's on an elite offense. He should handle some pass down work. You know, like previously before Giovanni Bernard went down, Fournette was handling a decent amount of targets. And a lot of that comes down to, you know, when players are on first and second down and a run play is called, or it's a run pass option, sometimes those players end up with targets because of play changes. So it's not like Leonard Fournette is locked into the two down goal line role, no pass catching ability. He'll get some targets regardless. But man, Rashad White's draft capital is enough of a concern for me to ding him a little bit.
This is tough for me too, Matt. And I've had days where I'm feeling exactly like you are. I think Rashad White could be a stud in the league. I think they got a really good one in him, but we haven't seen him, obviously. Leonard Fournette, last year in expected fantasy points per game, third among running backs. The opportunity when you're a running back playing as much as you do, as he did last year on Tom Brady's team, is just, it's just so high. Only Alvin Kamara, Najee Harris, and Derrick Henry when healthy, actually, as well. But still, we're talking about elite, elite expected fantasy points. That is something that I value very highly. The question marks, they're there. They're absolutely there. I just can't get away from him. I just can't get away from him. Maybe I need to reevaluate. I'm definitely really high on him right now. And the touch squeeze could be on, and he could still enter the doghouse with a few fumbles here. I just want Tom Brady's offenses running back one. It's just going to score a lot of touchdowns. Basic as that.
I agree. I have a question for you. We're not going to get into Connor too quickly, but just a question here. Every running back in this group, I think, has a question you could ask about their carries, their targets. James Conner's the only player that doesn't have that, in my opinion. So you have Leonard Fournette. They drafted Rashad White. There's a question there about the pass catching role. There is nobody of consequence behind James Conner. Nobody. Like, the only players that are there, undrafted free agents, are day three players. So do you have Leonard Fournette ahead of James Conner?
I actually do. I have them very, very close. I have them two running backs apart. I have Fournette, Elliott, and then James Conner. I may be overweighting. I knew a free agent signing was coming, so that was part of it. And I may be overweighting the valuation of Darrell Williams, who at times was productive when given the opportunity in Kansas City. I just think James Conner is a running back that I get nervous about because they had so much of their fantasy productivity come from touchdowns. But I may be underweighting the fact that Chase Edmonds has left and there's so much receiving opportunity. And like you said, mostly unproven players behind him, even with this free agency signing of Darrell Williams. I have no problem coming out of the draft with a player like James Conner instead of Leonard Fournette, but if you're asking me what the most important metric in fantasy football is for me, it's expected fantasy points, and a player I'm getting that much value on, still in the same theoretical role, I do have to have them just a little bit higher. Just my preference, though.
Yeah, for sure. I think it comes down to how much you personally think Rashad White plays. If Rashad White plays the pass catching role, those expected fantasy points are going to decline. But again, he's a day two rookie, and we saw similar draft capital to Keyshawn Vaughn, and he's never got on the field. So it comes down entirely to how I think Rashad White plays.
And we'll see, you know, we'll see how my all my fantasy drafts end up, because if I don't get Leonard Fournette or someone else in the draft room is really high on them and I end up with Rashad White and suddenly I've got like 80% Rashad White because of that, well, I'll try not to be biased because of that. I promise. We go to number 14 on our list, David Montgomery. And this is a volatile player in our rankings. People are feeling extremely different about this player. I'm pretty high on David Montgomery, maybe too high, especially with the fact that Justin Fields, a rushing quarterback, is expected to play a full season here. David Montgomery on a poor Bears offense heading into 2022 will get the workload, but will it be valuable, Matt, this year?
I definitely do not think it'll be valuable, but the question is, can he get enough of it where that doesn't matter? Sort of your early career James Robinson. With David Montgomery, putting him this high is making a ton of assumptions. You have entirely new coaching staff coming in, a new front offense that didn't draft him, and a player that hasn't really been productive. Yes, he's seen a massive workload. His forced missed tackles are decent, but he's just not a guy with enough athleticism to do anything after he forces those missed tackles. So you have a player who ends up with middling production in the pass game and the run game. Like last year, averaging 17.3 carries per game and finishing just shy 850 yards is pretty dang bad, especially for a player that was fully healthy. And then you look at the offensive line, it definitely didn't get any better. I think the best thing you can say about it is maybe their former second-round pick, Tevin Jenkins, plays. He's a player that has severe back injuries, so I don't even think that's a guarantee. The one positive I will say, and a lot of people ding Montgomery for this, is the presence of Justin Fields. He has this perception of being an elite dual-threat quarterback. He's never done that. He's mobile and he has a good 40-yard dash, but for whatever reason, he's never been a runner. He can situationally scramble, sort of like a Mahomes, but not used on design runs, doesn't have a solid scramble rate. So unless the new coaching staff unblocks that, I don't really view that as being a concern. To me, the problem is it's just the Bears are so bad, and you're making the assumption that Khalil Herbert doesn't play. This team drafted Tristan Ebner on day three, and Tristan Ebner is an elite pass catcher. They also signed Darrington Evans, who kind of was supposed to play that role with Tennessee and never could stay on the field due to injury. It's just a lot of assumptions with Montgomery being ranked this high.
Wow. There it is. The Bears case, and I mean bear market case for David Montgomery, not the Chicago Bears case. I think there is a Bulls argument there for the ceiling, the upside for a player like Montgomery. And obviously, I can talk about fantasy expected points all day. He was running back 9 in half PPR expected fantasy points per game last season, and we are drafting him significantly lower than that. His 50 red zone touches was 5th in the league, and he only played 13 games last season. He was 4th in the NFL in opportunity share with 80% of the opportunities going to him. 2nd in the NFL in snap share. Actually, I think that stat is wrong on my list, but I still want to say that he was still pretty elusive in 13 games. He had 64 evaded tackles, about 5 per game. So I'm looking at a player with much higher draft capital than the players around him. Yes, there is some pass catching concerns, if you will, but I think he's the most elusive player. And if he gets the opportunity share like he did, I think you're getting a value at ADP. That's just kind of how I feel about it. It's not a bad team. I think this is why people start to call this the running back dead zone, because you can absolutely look at this as a fool's gold situation. He's not going to get the same opportunity. He's on arguably as bad or a worse team, and he has increased touch squeeze possibility. I get it. I'm still drafting David Montgomery probably higher than I should be. I'll have to really evaluate things, because I still like him a lot.
Yeah, I like him too. And you have to... We're all making assumptions here. It's the offseason. I love expected fantasy points, but it's a metric from the previous season, and we're trying to project moving forward. So if you guaranteed me he was seeing that same workload, yeah, I'd have him ranked higher. But I think there's enough concerns where you cannot guarantee that. I do think he's more likely to receive that workload than some other players we had a little further down the list. But ultimately, I still think you're making assumptions. And when you're making assumptions about bad teams, that's where things can start to spiral.
It's a great point. Point well taken, sir. We move on to the final person we're going to discuss in depth, and it is technically our running back 13. You actually had to draft him a little bit higher in fantasy drafts in previous seasons, but we're talking about Nick Chubb. Could be on arguably the best offense he's ever been on when Deshaun Watson is available, whenever that is this season. Nick Chubb obviously has always had concerns in the passing game. One of the most elusive, just arguably the best pure rusher we have in the NFL. Derrick Henry might have something to say about that, but Chubb is a great player on a great team. What do you feel about him heading into this year?
He's a really tough player to rank, because you know the upside's there, but it comes through arguably like the least impactful part of fantasy football. Like, he doesn't have a big ceiling in the pass game because of the presence of Kareem Hunt. And there's been rumors that the team could move on from Kareem Hunt this year to save some money. Some of their offseason moves year over year have indicated that. They've drafted 2 pass catching backs, Demetric Felton in 2021, and they take Jerome Ford out of Cincinnati this year. Both those players can occupy the pass catching role. So I think even if Hunt moves on, there's still a chance that Chubb is in this 2-down role. And last year, he averaged 1.8 targets per game. So it's not terrible, but it's definitely not great. Where Nick Chubb's bread is buttered is on the ground. And luckily, he's on an offense which is extremely run-heavy. Even if Deshaun Watson plays the majority of the season, I don't think their pass rate is going to be in this Buffalo Bills, Dallas Cowboys range. Last year, they were 24th in pass rate in neutral game scripts, which I think they'll end up finishing around there. if Deshaun Watson's at quarterback, and then if they have to play Baker Mayfield or Jacoby Brissett, there's a chance that drops even further, and you have an extremely run-heavy team. He's also behind an elite offensive line. You just look down the board. Solid starters at every single position. Jedrick Wills, Betonio, Wyatt Teller, Conklin. Those are phenomenal names. So I do expect Cleveland to still be good, score a lot of points, which to me, Nick Chubb, if he's going to be handling most of the carries, he needs the touchdowns and he needs the extra rushing attempts, which at first glance to me, I think the Cleveland offense is conducive to those things.
That's the part where I think we agree. The part where I am a little bit different, and I think you're right, I'm making assumptions here, but I think we move much closer to league average in terms of pass plays per game and just a more up-tempo offense, especially when Deshaun Watson plays. But I think the Jacoby Brissett signing indicates to me that what they want to do is have a player who executes the Deshaun Watson offense when Deshaun Watson is not available for whatever reason. So I do think Nick Chubb has more touchdown upside because of the offense he'll play on. And just more, just we know his explosive ability is up there with the very best in the NFL. He's another player that I definitely am going to take my chances on in regular fantasy drafts a little bit more than best ball drafts because his spike weeks are few and far between. They're basically through touchdowns. You know you're not getting those mega reception days like you can from a Christian McCaffrey or player like that. So Nick Chubb for me is a good regular home league RB2 pick that makes it feel really solid about the position. Not my favorite at ADP in best ball. This was a super fun discussion, Matt. I do want to bring up a couple of running backs outside of our top 24 consensus rankings and hear your favorite of these players. Just going to list them off. And if you've got one player that you really sticks out to you, I'd love to hear about them. AJ Dillon, Breece Hall of the Jets, Clyde Edwards-Helaire of the Chiefs, Devin Singletary, who has increased competition from James Cook, Chase Edmonds of the Miami Dolphins, and Miles Sanders of the Philadelphia Eagles. Any of those players stand out, positive or negative?
Yeah, there's three that stand out, two positive, one negative. Breece Hall, I think you're just getting, he's really easy to evaluate, I think. You're kind of working with the David Montgomery situation where you have a potential three-down workhorse role on a really bad team. He does have some competition in the past game with Carter, but can Breece Hall with elite draft capital overcome that and maybe like take a sort of the path that Jonathan Taylor took with Nyheim Hines? I think certainly think that's in the range of outcomes. I love Miles Sanders. The backfield got a little bit more clear this offseason. You lose Jordan Howard, which thank goodness I like Jordan Howard early in his career, but it's finally good to see just the thumper goal line vulture out of the picture. They still have Boston Scott and Kenneth Gainwell. A lot of people are worried about Gainwell, but I don't really see it. He's a player that did get opportunity at points last year, disappointed, and then was moved firmly into the doghouse. So unless he has an elite offseason, I'm not sure he's going to be able to regain that. Not to mention he's a day three pick anyway. So the expectation for Kenneth Gainwell is nothing more than like a situational change of pace or a pure handcuff. There's a chance he doesn't even make the roster. Boston Scott is still there, and Boston Scott doesn't have much draft capital himself, but he's played long enough in the league where I think he has a role. Miles Sanders has been elite when healthy. The question is, can he remain healthy? And I think if it ends up being a 1-2 punch between him and Scott, Sanders has a chance to handle the pass down role. The guy I'm completely out on in this is AJ Dillon. For him to hit his ceiling, you need an Aaron Jones injury. And there's just absolutely no way I'm drafting AJ Dillon in best ball or season long injuries, especially like inside the top 70, assuming there needs to be an injury. Like it's, you can take players that have the same A.J. Dillon profile, even standalone value like A.J. Dillon has much later, a la Gus Edwards and some other players. So he's just a player that I see absolutely no reason to draft. I wouldn't be surprised if I end up with zero of him.
Wow. Not into A.J. Dillon. We will leave you with that, Matt. This was a very, very in-depth, exciting discussion about the nitty-gritty of the running back position. There's probably going to be a league winner in this group. And it was really fun breaking it down with you today. Make sure to follow him on Twitter at @Matt_Gajewski. I am at Draftaholic. I'm Matt Sobotka. He's Matt Gajewski. We'll be back soon enough on the Awesome-O Fantasy Football Channel. We'll see you guys later.